If I can just say, that's, sorry, Michelle.
Sure. That's one of the issues about the trusting environment. People from Mexico feel more comfortable in the Mexican consulate. It's like a little piece of Mexico. So it's not just neutral, it's more comforting, I think, in a sense.
Good afternoon. I'm feeling an enormous sense of deja vu, seeing good old friends in the audience and being able to talk about something that I haven't been able to talk about for decades, and going back to my roots as a medical anthropologist in Mexico. So this is a wonderful opportunity for me, and to be able to share with you some very interesting data from a project that is current, and to be able to compare it to a project that was done before most of you were born. That's scary. I want to thank the team from the University of Texas Austin Office of Population Research for including me in this project. It had begun before I became a part of it, and for allowing me to include more qualitative and anthropological data than most docs and epidemiologists and demographers would have allowed. So thank you all, and the team is here so that when you ask questions, they will be able to help me to answer them. We're going to talk today about a project that was originated because of some preliminary data that was from Thomason Hospital, a postpartum survey showing substantial cross-border procurement of oral contraceptives and injectables, and of course the policy debate about relaxing U.S. prescription requirement for oral contraception, and really a very surprisingly thin literature on Hispanic fertility and contraceptive practice given the size and growth of this population in our country, and the existing differentials between Hispanics and non-Hispanic whites. The overall study aims were to find out if women can self-screen whether or not oral contraception is appropriate for them, to assess the knowledge that they had about the pill and whether an educational leaflet would improve their knowledge, and to compare knowledge, satisfaction, and continuation of women obtaining pills in Juarez pharmacies versus in El Paso clinics. And I'm sure most of you here know that there's a tremendous cross-border commerce in using pharmacies, not just in Juarez, but all along the border, because of the availability of non-prescription hormonal methods as well as other pharmaceuticals. Part one of the study was the self-screening study, a sample of 1,271 women recruited at shopping malls and a flea market, and they were asked whether the pill would be right for them. A self-screening checklist was used to identify WHO Category 3 and 4 contraindications, and there was an assessment by a nurse practitioner. Many different reasons were given for oral contraception being unsafe, and in a sample of 503, we see that previous negative experience was important, as well as concerns of side effects, and then followed by medical contraindication, women who were not sure, women who saw no need for the pill, other medical conditions, women who felt they were too old, and women who said they would seek medical advice. The second part of the study was a sample of 500 clinic users and 500 pharmacy users. There was a random assignment to an informational leaflet, and subjects interviewed in person at recruitment, which was baseline, followed up by two phone interviews at 3-month intervals, our time 2 and time 3 data, and a final in-person interview 9 months after baseline, our time 4 interview, at which we were able to incorporate some very interesting open-ended qualitative questions. In the pill user study, you see the sample differences. We looked at whether they were born in Mexico, the last year of education completed, and their primary language at home. And finally, of course, whether they wanted more children. Now I'm going to skip back a couple of centuries to 1973 and 1974, when the World Health Organization developed two task forces, the Task Force on the Cultural Acceptability of Contraceptive Methods, and then followed up by the related Task Force on Contraceptive Methods and Services, looking at the cultural acceptability of both methods and services that had to do with family planning. The model that was developed basically by an anthropologist, Jack Marshall, looked at contraceptive methods not as a medication or a device or a method in itself, but rather as a constellation of attributes that potential users would see as positive, as negative, and as neutral. And the list of areas for this cost-benefit evaluation by potential users included very interesting attributes such as gender of user. Who uses the method? Is it a man or a woman? What's the main action? What's the mode of action? What organs are implicated? What's the route of administration? How is it administered? How often do people have to use it? What are the circumstances of use? Is it a bedroom or a clinic? How effective is it? Now remember, these are perceived attributes. How long does the fertility regulation effect work? And you'll see in some of our data that's following, this is very important. Long-term safety, convenience in obtaining it, convenience in using it, familiarity with what it is, the cost, of course, physical properties, which has a lot to do with side effects, and also very significant cultural issues such as color, taste, odor, size. And the most important of all that has emerged in almost every study that's been done, of course, is side effects. We did a study in the 1970s, I'm dating myself, when the population policy changed in Mexico, which was 1973. And this was one of the first studies done looking at the issues for the introduction of community-based family planning in Mexico. And one of the questions that was asked by the Center for Population and Family Health, now called the Heilbronn Department, was what are the things that are influencing people's acceptance of contraceptive methods and their effective use? And we did a study in a village in semi-rural Mexico, and we were interested in why women were spacing their use of methods and taking a descanso, a rest. And the doctors were saying, these women don't know how to take pills. We tell them again and again how to take these pills, and they're not doing it right, and they're stopping taking them, and then they're getting pregnant, and we don't understand what's going on. So, of course, when they don't understand what's going on, they send in an anthropologist. What I did was I asked the women who were illiterate to draw what they thought the inside of their body looked like and where the baby would start to grow. And, of course, the answer was, I don't know how to write, I don't know how to draw. And I would hand them a pencil and say, just show me where the baby starts to grow. And what I'm showing you here is not an outlier, but a typical example of what the women drew. As you can see, no sense of system. The organs were basically concentric circles in the abdomen. Tripas, vientre, were basically intestines and they did know where an IUD went, as you can see, D-I-U-D-U. And vagina was never mentioned, even if they knew the word. It was always called la parte o el cuerpo, because you never said that word. And the liver was located next to the heart. So you can see that if a doctor is teaching or a nurse or a community-based volunteer is teaching about how an oral contraceptive method works and explains that anything about ovulation or fallopian tubes or uterus, it doesn't mean anything if the information's not there. Now I'm taking you back to now and what we learned from the women that we interviewed. And I'm also giving you some outliers, but basically some very typical information here. The perceived mechanism of action, when we asked 861 women, included that the oral contraceptive expels sperm. It's a barrier to sperm. It kills or changes ovulos, eggs. It changes the uterus. It tricks the body into thinking it's pregnant. It manipulates hormones. It kills hormones. It kills ovaries. That was one or two people. And of course, it aborts a pregnancy. And here's an example. It makes your body believe it's pregnant. Well, you can hear some nurse or doctor saying that rather than giving more information. Something happens within a woman's body that stops the sperm from going up and the ovum from going out. It forms a mucus. Okay, well, there's some information there that's interpreted correctly and some information that isn't. Hormones as cells, células, that kill sperm. Hormones you have to take every day so you don't become pregnant. They're cells we have in our body, and when the sperm of a man enters the vagina, the contents of the pill kills the sperm. The pill obstructs the uterus, and it's very interesting because in other places in Latin America where we've looked at the cultural acceptability of contraception and beliefs about the body and body processes, we also see the belief that pills don't dissolve, but they accumulate and cause problems or block processes from happening. And this woman has clearly asked her husband, who says that the pills go directly to the uterus, and her uterus becomes infertile. It's like a plug that reaches the mouth of the uterus. And this also relates to the belief that the pills form a ball that can come up at some point and choke you. We didn't hear that in this one, but I've heard it numerous times in the field. The pill affects the brain, and again, the rejection of sperm. The pill inside the stomach passes through the bloodstream, the female organ, not to become pregnant, and the reproductive organs. I would have liked to have been there and asked the difference between the female organ and the reproductive organs. The pill is a poison. It's bad because it poisons your body and your uterus. It's some type of antibiotic. We heard many perceptions of possible negative effects. It affects your skin, your hair, you gain weight. It increases or decreases your blood pressure. You have respiratory problems, problems with your eyes, migraines, stomach pains, nausea, bloating, nervous system. I mean, we've heard these all, not just from Latinas, but from many women who believe that these are side effects of the pills and indeed have problems. You gain weight, it can cause heart attacks, you get varicose veins. The pill's bad for your circulation, migraines, nausea, vomiting. If you stop taking them, you get symptoms. It's like a drug. This is very interesting, the issue of addiction, especially from a population that hears so much about illicit drugs. When a woman has taken the pill for a long time, she may become sterile. We've also heard this for many decades, that the pill causes sterility. One has to take a rest from the pill. Well, this is what we heard over 30 years ago. I don't want to have consequences affecting my uterus. Cancer. We also asked about non-contraceptive benefits, and I didn't expect that we would hear very much, but we heard pills regulate your menstrual cycle. It improves your skin. It improves your hair. It alters your weight in a positive way. Your moods are more even. It prevents reproductive cancers. That one has gotten out. Body cleansing, very interesting. Acne, of course. It regulates cholesterol. It stops bloating. It prevents depression, and it prevents AIDS and STIs, which is a very dangerous belief. There are times the pill makes you lose weight, so we're hearing the opposite. There's less possibility of uterine cancer. It helps your ovaries, your breasts develop more. It's good for your health. It protects against cardiac arrest. It protects against osteoporosis for a short time. It regulates your period. It helped my skin. Hormones and estrogens helped me. Bravo. So to summarize, the negative perceptions of the pill are clearly still prevalent in this population. There are many current beliefs that are similar to data from the 60s and 70s. Many women feel the pill is unsafe for them due to misconceptions rather than true contraindications. There's less emphasis, interestingly, on blood clots, heart attacks, and stroke, three items which have been emphasized consistently in the popular press. And we also saw that the informational leaflet basically had no positive influence. So what does this mean for women and their providers? It means that we need different and more appropriate ways to counsel and educate underserved Hispanic women. We need more information on the body and body processes, and we've been saying this for over 30 years. We need more information on hormonal methods. And we need to develop alternative ways to inform women about reproductive health. And we don't have to reinvent the wheel. The government of Mexico has been using Promotora networks for decades. There were whole sexenios of developing outreach programs in rural and urban slum areas using health promoters who understood the needs for education and information in their populations. And we are not doing that. So I think the conclusions are echoed again by the title, A Little Knowledge is a Dangerous Thing. I think we have a responsibility to make sure that we provide the right kind of information and that women are making decisions based on the information that they need to decide about their contraceptive method, and we're still not doing it. Thank you. Questions, complaints, jokes, concerns, ideas.
I thought of the EM, the liver close to the heart, and I thought about, I wonder what the relational issues are around chloroplasty.
Yeah.
And how that hurts my heart.
Yeah.
I don't know, but when I saw that, I thought.
It's interesting because in all of our body drawings and many in other places in Latin America, the liver is put next to the heart, and I think it has something to do with some Catholic beliefs that are mixed with indigenous beliefs about the heart and the liver, but I haven't got an answer for that, but it's very consistent. Yes. Where's my team?
We interviewed a total of 1,000 women over 9 months. And they were all across the region. And in the Time 4 interview, we discovered in earlier interviews that we had a series of closed-end questions which we asked about health information. And consistently got that
how does the pill work inside your body? What does it do to prevent you from getting pregnant? How does it work?
Are there any positive, we didn't use the word effects, we didn't like the word side effects.
Yes.
Very few of the clubs had to do with anything else but the pill. So there was very little reference to, say, condoms or...
We were not exploring those issues. We were looking at the pill and where it was obtained and what kind of information they had about hormonal contraception.
That explains why we still see syphilis in the rates of the 1940s.
Well, not only are we seeing 1940 syphilis rates, but I just spoke to the director of the HIV clinic at La Fe, one of our two AIDS services in El Paso, and she's very concerned about the dramatic increase in syphilis that she's seeing now. So it's not going in the right direction. Yes? Questions on the other papers? Or do you want to go on with this? Or?
I was wondering about this. I had a question about it too.
Okay.
Dan, we can't hear you.
I was just saying the one piece of contraceptive knowledge, the questions that we've looked at so far have to do with emergency contraception. And in that analysis, it's about the younger women.
There's a question in the back. Do you have a handout in the back or no? There are copies of Michelle's presentation, Miriam's presentation, and Maria Teresa's presentation at the back of the room. So, and you can continue discussion via email, I'm sure. Yeah, you had a question? Comes from the misinterpretation.
Far be it from me to defend doctors, but come from doctors, it's other people who are giving them the information. And I think there are a lot of very responsible health educators and clinic personnel and nurses and health educators in the services and even pharmacists in the pharmacies who are giving correct information. But if you take information and you put it on top of an inadequate understanding of reproductive anatomy and physiology, it's interpreted by empirical observation, life experience, hearsay, grapevine. And so unless they have the fundamentals, they're getting new information which might be adequate for you or me, but it's not adequate for women who don't have an understanding of how their body works.
But not only that, it's layered on top of a group of women or a culture where they are reticent to ask questions, to probe, to go to services. So it's complicated by that as well, as Miriam was saying. I was just wondering, we have about 10 minutes, and I thought it would be fun to maybe think about some of the unique aspects of the border region. I'm just thinking, for example, related to oral contraception. You know, is it true that in Tijuana, for example, that you don't need a prescription to get the pills, but you do here? What are the differences? Does that cause women to cross over and do different things and not get enough information because they can get it without a prescription, so therefore they don't have the counseling session? I mean, if we could start maybe thinking about some of the unique elements of living and working on the in the border and how that affects these attitudes and practices, that might be kind of interesting. So, yeah. Yeah, in the back.
I'm Rosa from New Orleans, and I think some of you were at the session yesterday when you were talking about the camera. And it's real interesting. I've been working with Latinas in New Orleans and Katrina, and many of them go, we have grocery stores that are Latino grocery stores that sell the pill over the counter. Ooh. And what I was mentioning was it would be great to have it over the counter because they're buying expired pills, and many of them are taking it.
And again, all without counseling and or you know any kind of support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think there's also a tendency to not check in to see if the information is getting across or sinking in. It's counseling is interpreted as a mini lecture and not a listening interchange where you check in to see whether there's comprehension, questions, which does take a little bit more time, as you said. Yeah, here and then I'm back.
Mm-hmm. What about health education in the schools? I mean, if this woman are 80 years old, if they have gone to school, then I understand that there is health education. At least they know that there is some liver. I mean, they may not know what it is, but what is the curriculum for?
Well, on this side of the border, there is a growing feeling that anytime you talk about anything having to do this means that you're encouraging it. So if you talk about sex, you're encouraging it. If you're talking about drugs, you're encouraging it. If you're talking about whatever, you're encouraging it. So there does tend to be, that doesn't mean that there isn't health education or sex ed in the schools, but there's just a growing reticence to be open, honest, direct. I don't know how it is handled on the other side of the border. Do you know?
Mexico is way ahead of us. Mexico has had family life education materials, for example, called Planeando tu Vida, Yo Adolescente, excellent materials that were developed by INIFAP in Mexico City that have been accepted by the Ministry of Education and are distributed in schools all over the country. They talk about contraception, they talk about sex and sexuality. They're really excellent materials, and unfortunately, we don't have that kind of openness to education of our adolescents that Mexico has, and these extraordinarily wonderful materials. Matter of fact, we're trying to bring some of the INIFAP materials to our population in El Paso. So I think the answer is that Mexico could teach us a great deal about educating our youth.
Majority of the teachers don't have the training to even use those kind of materials. Mm-hmm. Or the empowerment or the feeling good about their own sexuality and their own bodies to really address.
And that's a really important issue, and that's one of the reasons that INIFAP has programs for training teachers all over the country, because it's crucial. The materials are not enough. In 1985 at Columbia University, we began to develop materials that were English as a second language health education materials, now called health literacy, but in those days we called it health education. And one of the booklets that we used in the English as a second language program was a little booklet called Know Your Body. And there were pictures, very simple line drawings with English and Spanish and kind of more bilingual than ESL format. And the teachers in New York told me that if the page that listed vagina was in there, or penis, that they would not use the materials. And so in order for the booklet to be used, we had to eliminate what we knew would stop them from using the materials. So clearly the empowerment of the teachers, the education and the desensitization of the teachers is something that mm-hmm. we could do well to use the INIFAP model.
Yeah. I think somebody else mentioned machismo. Miriam mentioned how reaching men. I think that's another element to this. I think we need to do better at reaching the men in these partners.
We did a large needs assessment of levy. We started the first 2 years. We did a large needs assessment, 10 sites, including Puerto Rico, of Latinas. The third year we added men. And we added men based on the female's recommendation of, you know, if you want to prevent it, if you stop talking to us, start
right.
Down.
Mm-hmm. Brave, you have to say who we need.
With the National Council of La Raza. And when we did this, so the third year we took in, we went to men and women in 4 sites, 2 of which were on El Paso and San Isidro, and we found that the men corroborated. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in a lot of cases, the men totally admitted all of the things that the women had been saying in terms of risk. And when we look at HIV, it's just HIV specific, Latinos are the only ones that have seen a 40% increase in heterosexual infection in just a few years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think this is a dynamic. We obviously, Mexico must be doing something really well because fertility has gone, I mean, it's down to 2, which is 2 per woman. So, I mean, it's really gone down. So, obviously, something's working. But around that other element that comes in with HIV and other STIs, we've got a lot of work. And I think helping them understand what the anatomy is.
It's a
Any last comments from the panelists or other questions or comments from the audience? Do you have any other left? No? Nothing else? All right, we are adjourned. Thank you so much. Thank you.
This is Kate Wilson from California.
Hola, ¿qué tal?
Our country director in Nicaragua.
So, Leonel, Kate. Oh. No, with
good thing you weren't already there.
I know. So, Kate did the presentation on abortion
crossing the border.
Yeah.
But we do
She did right now in this city.
Yeah, but we do. I'm in Mexico City and with the Population Council. We do a number of abortion. Were you at the recent Congress that we helped co-host in October in Mexico City around abortion research and unwanted pregnancy? Okay, there was a large Nicaraguan constituency. Yeah.
Let me take a picture.
You're so nice.
You're kidding. I don't want to pose pictures.
Okay, more like what?
They eliminated the political abortion in Nicaragua.
I know, in 2006.
And so I'm part of a group that is coordinating. There's a very group that is trying to decriminalization of
There were, during in the beginning of October, actually during this conference in Mexico City, two representatives from Nicaragua stood up and said, just now we learned that a number of Nicaraguan feminists were detained by the government. There's something like
yeah,
that.
There is
what's happened with them? We wrote a whole letter.
Not detained, but they were accused.
Accused
yeah,
of.
But right now, the current government we have is against any NGO.
Okay.
But mostly the women, because our president.
Daniel Ortega?
Was accused of her stepdaughter.
He raped his stepdaughter?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't like him. He's already blacklisted.
So now he's against any kind of woman group.
Wow. But what has happened with these women who are accused?
Well, they're still accused. The government called them and asked them questions. And they just, right now we have a municipal election, so they stopped it a little bit.
Yeah.
But they're gonna keep going.
Yeah.
They need to put all of them in jail. There are 8 women leaders.
They're trying to put them all in jail.
Yeah. That's the idea. Because those are the group of women who support.
For like the heads of NGOs. Oh, okay.
No, we have a dictatorship in Nicaragua now.
Coming from the Sandinista movement, I mean, like, such a transformation.
Yeah,
he's
not a
Sandinista. No, now he's the opportunity.
He's using the lens.
Far right wing. Oh, that's...
Just training all of us. First time in more than 20 years that I feel like when I was going out of the country, I feel like maybe they would retain it.
And you felt like that this time?
Yeah.
Wow.
This is time again. I live in 2 dictators in 1 life. That's too much.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's getting bad.
Very, very bad.
No, he's saying that the 8 feminist leaders in Nicaragua, they were accused and that the government is trying to detain them.
Everybody's accusing everybody.
Yeah.
That's the thing, right? I mean,
it's
the sense of fear that you're going to be accused of something next.
And Daniel Ortega raped his stepdaughter.
What?
And so these feminists are supporting him.
Yeah. He's against, but right now he's doing a meeting like that.
He's against
with different NGOs and saying that everything's okay, blah, 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 blah. But he has been very clear since he started. He's against any kind of NGO. The guy who ran the president of the Global Fund went and talked with him, and he says very clearly to him, no way, we will not want, if you want to send money to the government, we will not allow any NGO to work AIDS in this country.
Hmm.
That's what he told me. And there are several NGOs that are accused with legal documents, which really are illegal, and they go into the NGO and take the books and
the
take the computers.
Yeah, take the documents.
And
take
he's
the
accusing the NGOs of money laundering. Well, first triangulation. He said that the NGOs are using funds to give it to another organization.
But it doesn't matter if it's U.S., it doesn't matter if they're outside of Nicaragua, if they're local, indigenous,
no,
it doesn't matter.
He's accusing Oxfam.
Right, I heard that.
Alphan is currency also. Currency is Fed. Fed is a fund for equity and gender.
Mm. But including Nicaraguan indigenous NGOs.
Yeah,
he,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Has CEPS and PPI been like audited or anything
not,
yet?
Not right now. Not right now.
That was an earthquake.
Not right now, but things are getting really bad. I mean, European Union, the U.S. ambassador, everybody is
against it. Let's go sit out in the sun and get out of the
but
sun.
But what can be done?
We'll sit over
sounds
there.
Like he's blocking everyone.
Yeah, he wants to manage all the money. He wants to keep quiet everybody. He wants to let everybody agree what he says.
Okay.